like he's going to fish on a bad shot.
Okay. Start off. Sorry if you're my shoe and you might have heard my openers. So you don't have to hear it again. didn't see this, and as I got a mason asks a question, which I think is gives a very beautiful answer. He asks, why is it that on Pesach we're celebrating essentially Geula, that we were in Mitzrayim, or in Golus Mitzrayim, and then there was Geula, Yitzias Mitzrayim, and that's what we celebrate every year. So Nesivus asks, it doesn't really seem to be an appropriate celebration because now we're back in Golus. So it's very nice that once upon a time there was Golus, and then there was Geula from that Golus. And it makes sense to celebrate that Geula, calls man that the Geula is still with us, still there. But once we're back in Golus, what's the point of celebrating Geula? The Geula is gone. So the Nesivus says, you can answer out there, Mashal. You have a person who was in jail for many years and is waiting, when's the day I'm going to get out of jail? When's the day I'm going to get out of jail? And finally, let's say on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, one year he's freed from jail. And that day, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, every year makes a Suta Soda for his friends and family, invites everybody over, and he celebrates the fact that he's free from jail on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And years go by, and lo and behold, he's once again arrested, and he's thrown back into jail. And starting already from the beginning of Adar in jail, he starts siphoning off like little pieces of, extra sugar, extra bread, extra something. So that by the time he reaches Rosh Chodesh Nisan in jail, so he sets up for himself a little feast in his jail cell. And, Rosh Chodesh Nisan comes and he eats a big feast and he starts singing and dancing around his cell. And the guards come by and look into the cell and see this crazy guy singing and dancing. And they're like, what are you doing? And he says, it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. They're like, yeah. He said, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the day I got out of jail. I'm celebrating. So they're like, well, you fool. Like, don't you see that you're back in jail now? It's not cause for celebration. So he said to them, no, you don't understand that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the day I got out of jail. And it reminds me that just like I used to be in jail and I came out, so now that I'm back in jail, I'm going to come out again. And that's what I'm celebrating. So the Nesivus says that on Leil HaSeder, we're celebrating, not only commemorating the Yetzias Mitzrayim, but we're celebrating and anticipating the time when Hashem is going to take us back out of this Golus that we're in now. And the fact that we were in Mitzrayim, and Golus Mitzrayim, Hashem took us out then, reminds us and reassures us that just like he took us out then, he's going to take us out again today. That's what Nesivus says. So that's one answer. I heard from Rav Asher Weiss another answer, also with a mashal. Beautiful mashal. Rav Asher Weiss said that once upon a time he was a very poor man, and he had children and a family, and he would always daven to Hashem, please Hashem, I only want one thing out of life, that my children should grow up to be Bnei Torah and Talmidei Chachamim and Yerei Shamayim. And the only way for me to do that is to educate them properly, but I have no money. I can't educate them. I can't afford rebbes. I can't afford tuitions. I can't afford anything. So please, Hashem, send me money so that I can send my kids to the right places, the right yeshivas, give them best education. And finally, one day, he wins the lottery. He wins millions of dollars, we'll say on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, every year, he also makes a Suda Soda. Suda Soda, every year, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, all his friends, all his family, all his neighbors, everybody knows it comes to his house. And celebrates the fact that his fortunes changed. And years go by, and decades go by, and his children all grow up, and one after the other, each one, B'dei Torah, and Talmidei Chachamim, and Yerei Shamayim, and exactly what he wished for, and every year, and that Rosh Chodesh Nisan, everybody looks forward to the great Suda Soda that their father is going to make. And one year, he makes a bad investment, he loses everything. All the money's gone. And that year on Adar, in Adar, so again, just like every year, he starts sending out invitations, making phone calls, making Suda Soda, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, I hope everybody's going to be there, his friends, his family, his neighbors. And his family's a little bit concerned, like what happened to dad? He doesn't even realize there's nothing left. It's like, what kind of Suda Soda are we making now? They're nervous what's going to happen when everybody actually shows up. So finally, Rosh Chodesh Nisan comes and everybody shows up and they're at his big table. And every other year, the table's full of food and all sorts of delicacies. And this year, the table's empty. And the whole neighborhood is there, and the family, and the friends. And the father's sitting at the head of the table. And he said, I bet you're probably all wondering why I called you back this year also for Suda Soda. Everybody knows the money's gone. So what are we doing here? So he said, all those years ago, I was davening to Hashem so deeply from such a please, Hashem, I was begging him, send me money, but I only asked for that money for one reason. The reason I wanted that money is that my children should grow up, Torah and mitzvahs, Talmidei Chachamim. That was the only reason I asked for the money. And that's exactly what happened. Here we are today, the money's gone, but the money was never for the money anyway. That wasn't the goal. The end, the point of the money was the Torah and the mitzvahs. And look at you, look at everybody around the table. Everyone, Talmidei Chachamim, and Yerei Shemayim, and Bnei Torah, and everything that I always dreamed for, it all came true. So that's the real reason for the Suda Sadah. So Rav Ashi said, the real reason for Yetzias Mitzrayim is not just so that we're not slaves anymore. Obviously, that's very important. But the real reason for Yetzias Mitzrayim is that we should get the Torah, to lead us to Kabbalah Satorah. And even though we're back in Golus now, just like we were in Golus and Mitzrayim, but the Golus of today is way different than the Golus that happened before Kabbalah Satorah. Now we're in Golus with Torah. And once we got the Torah, that can never be taken away from us. So we're celebrating on Leil HaSeder, not only the Gula for Mitzrayim, but really the first steps towards Kabbalah Satorah. And that was the whole point. That was the whole point of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that also warrants celebration, even though we're back in Golus. There are two ideas to answer that question. Tag.
Tag. Just give that a little handout for us. I'll start with one idea that I told Jacob before. It's my favorite word of the... on the entire Haggadah, any case I saw, this is my favorite vort, so I'll share with you quickly before I get to the thing I just Xeroxed for you. The Rav Pinkus writes down in his Haggadah, it says, "Afilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu nevonim, kulanu yonim setorah, even if we all are very knowledgeable, it's a mitzvah l'saper b'tzias Yisrael, v'chom saper is a meshubach." It's a little strange that if you know so much about it already, why is there a mitzvah to be saper b'tzias Yisrael? You know, I've seen this already. I've gone through this piece already. Now, obviously, the chazar, we have chazar as a concept. We have to know well and to review well. But what's the concept? Why is that such an idea? The Kabbalah Sefer Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the way that Rav Pinkus explains it is by a mashal. There's a mashal as well. Rav Pinkus says, imagine that you come back from Israel after a year, after 2 years. You visit a friend of yours who went straight to college, Rachmana Litzlan, right? And in college he took origami class, and he's like a fascinating. He's done some fantastic origami work, which is you take paper and you fold it up and you make cool shapes out of it. And this guy, you know, he spent the whole time learning Rashi. He tells us he spent his whole time folding paper, and he figured out how to make like a bird where when you tug on the tail, the wings flop. He comes over, come to my house. When you get back from Israel, I got something to show you. And you go out there, and you go to the house, and he pulls the tail, and bird starts flapping his arms, and you're like, this is, you know what? Money well spent. Call a kavod. It sounds like it's really a great job that you did and you learned in your college class. You mean it. It really was an impressive thing that you saw. And while you're on the way out, you know, there's like a fly that buzzed right by you. Like, get out of here, fly. You're like buzzing away. And there's an ant in your shirt. You're like, ugh, ants, get out of here. And Rav Pinkus asks, why are you more impressed with the origami paper cutout that has 10 flapping of wings than an actual fly that flaps its wings? Or than an ant that was just crawling your arm? Why are you like, whoa, an ant? Like, that's awesome. Why do you do that? So he says a very simple reason. He says, the first time you ever saw a fly or an ant, is probably when you were, the first time your mind recorded it was when you were a year and a half, 2 years old perhaps. So whenever you see a fly from now on, you open up the word fly in your brain, and the file with like a little like crayon drawing of fly, which is your crayon drawing of 2-year-old you, opens up and you see the fly again. And as a 2-year-old, you're not sophisticated enough to appreciate the fact that something unbelievable just happened, that you're watching a living animal, a living organism with sensory features that have it eat things. If you ever, I don't know if you ever watched, I like these things, maybe like the Discovery Channel, but you ever watch like on the other side of a glass window and or a glass door and you see like a bee or a fly, that thing that sucks, the same thing, you know what I'm talking about, right? Anyways, whether you do or not, it doesn't matter, I'm weird like that. But it happens to be that if you ever watched one and you just take a step back and you're like, whoa, that's unbelievable what I'm looking at right now. The reason we don't do that usually is because we're usually watching things from our 2-year-old version of ourselves. That's why when you, when you're more advanced and you learn more than you never saw beforehand, you're so much more wowed and impressed by it because you've never seen that and you never opened up that file in front of you ever seeing it right now when you're 15 years old, that's impressive. So when you walked out of the guy with the origami, you never saw someone make an origami. You're wowed by that. But the fly or the ant, you've seen since you were 2 years old. And it's not so impressive. It says Rav Pinkus, is a mitzvah l'saper. Even though you know, even if you're kulan chachamim, you already know it. Because a year happened since last time you talked about it. And in 1 year's time, how could it be that a person has not advanced in life to appreciate another detail of whatever took place? Certainly, this time period of your lives is a time period when you're watching yourselves develop and understand more about things in life. And as you get older, it only gets more advanced in your thinking. When you have you get married, you have a family, you have children, the more those things that you experience, the more you're wowed and awed by things that you never appreciated beforehand. So there's a mitzvah every year to look anew at everything going on around you. When you look at it again, you're going to see it differently than you did last time. Revolbi actually brings down the same thing when it comes to tefillah. When it comes to davening, he says you can never have the same davening twice in a row. How could you possibly, since you daven, let's say we daven mincha at 2:45, you daven shachris at, depends, but let's say 7:35. Awesome. So, you've had hours passed. You've had approximately 7 hours pass in the period of time when you daven Shemona Esrei number one, maybe a little less than that, Shemona Esrei number two. You're not the same person. 7 hours have passed in your life. The mushly brings, imagine you're riding on a train, you're in the train, and you're looking out the window. And if you would close your eyes for 5 minutes and open the window again, you're a whole different vantage point. You've been traveling at a very high speed for the last 5 minutes. Even if it's one big area, your perspective has changed because you've been traveling for 5 minutes at a very fast pace. How can a person go through 7 hours of his day and feel the same way he did 7 hours ago towards tefillah? It's impossible, that's what Revolbi said. Now again, it's hard for us to imagine. What do you mean? What did I do in the last 7 hours? Okay, I learned Tosfos. I saw Rashi. I talked to my Rebbe a little bit. I checked my emails. Like, what's that? So the point is that, again, maybe it's a little different when you have like Mincha Maariv back-to-back. It's Gakasha and Revolbi. I hear the Kasha. But apparently, even once you have Kriya Shema between tefillah and tefillah, you're a different place right now. A person should never look at himself as, oh, I did that already. A Rebbe's, our pet peeve is like, oh, I learned that already when I was in fourth grade. You learned as a fourth grader, you learned that already. Or if a Rebbe were giving a shiur, you're like, oh, I learned that Gemara when I was in 10th grade. I know this already. I've seen that already. You know it as a 10th grader. You know it as a young man who's trying to develop and grow in certain areas. You don't know it yet. And therefore, even if you've already seen it, there's a mitzvah l'saper again. Because the last time you saw it, and today, you've been changed people. And if you haven't been, then something's wrong with our year. It would be impossible not to be changed. This is my favorite word I like in Rufinkus. But I'm going to share with you just a different idea than tag the next person. There's a Haggadah, I recommend it highly. Haggadah, Gioni Alacha, by Rav Yitzchak Mirsky. It's an excellent Haggadah. And he asked a very interesting question. I just gave you the sheet. You can look at it later on. But highlight a few different small parts of it. But in the piece, he points out that we start off the Magid with Halach Ma'anya. This is the bread of poverty. Di'achlu avasana ba'arad Mitzrayim. That our forefathers ate in Mitzrayim. Now, usually we assume we eat matzah on the way out of Mitzrayim. It's usually what we assume for ourselves. So here we are celebrating the bread that was eaten in Mitzrayim, but we really ate it. It was really our bread we ate when we were redeemed at the end of the day. So which one was it? Or maybe a little bit of both. So anyone who looks at it, and you look at this piece later on, he goes through and explains, what's the difference between chametz and matzah? Time. Right? Time. It happens to be that we were, until we were slaves in Mitzrayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu the Mitzrayim did not allow us to let for our bread to rise, because had it risen, it would be too much time, and they want us to get to work quicker. And therefore, they gave us, they rushed us along, and all we had to eat was matzah. Ironically, on the way out of Mitzrayim, Hashem was so powerful and was destroying all the Mitzrayim around that they rushed us right out of Mitzrayim so we'd go to freedom right away. They wanted us out so quickly. And over here is where Pingus points out, and like if you look over here for a second, just the part I think I underlined, V'inei, B'shash Yatzu Yisrael Mitzrayim, page Chaf. B'shash Yatzu Yisrael Mitzrayim, Bikshu La'afos Lehem Lechem. We also want to break bread for ourselves, we want to have bread. Avagam Khan Miharu Asam Mitzrayim. But again, the Mitzrayim rushed us out, V'lo'ispiku Lehem Sha'atam El La'afos Matzos. We didn't have enough time, we only have time to be able to bake matzah. And again, the same thing that happened to us originally, when we couldn't have time to eat because we had to run to slavery, we now had to run to freedom. And it's not a coincidence. Says Rimersky, Bierus, I'm skipping down a few lines until we have the question mark in the middle of the page. Bierus Sforno Vashla Kadosh, Shagam Darazehu Me Maisel Okeinu. Hashem makes it this way. Shadabar Shashi Abdu Amitrim Esisrael Bo Gufo Yatsu L'Cherus. Hashem makes it the same thing that was before, the pain in our side, the thorn in our sides, the pain in our necks. Becomes later on the source of geula for us. I tell over every year to my students. So if you heard it already, I apologize. But there's a concept that we have that certain things that at some point in life were seemed to be a problem for us. They were bad things for us. Looking at a different angle, different lens, actually sees a real salvation for us. And this concept, I remember I read this over originally in the name of Yonason Eibschitz. Yonason Eibschitz used to have a very interesting custom on Friday nights. He was a rav of a community of a shul, and he would offer anyone that tzibur wants to get up and ask a kasha with a weekly portion. You're invited to get up, and he'll give his drasha that night about whatever question you ask. Usually, you had a young scholar working, an intelligent person who had some deep question about the parsha. And one Shabbos, one Friday night, there was a very simple blacksmith who got up and says, "I have a question. The question that bothers me is that my father always taught me when it comes to the trup, the kriyas haTorah, the leaning, that a kadma v'azla was a sign of simcha. And we see it says in the parsha about the servitude of Mitzrayim, v'yimaru eschayehem, and it's in a kadma v'azla trup. How could that be?" And he sits down and the whole place breaks out in laughter. What a foolish question. You know, what kind of question? A trup and a kadma. Rav actually goes up there and says, "That's a fantastic question. I'm going to share with you a pshat. I don't know if you thought about that time or you heard it earlier." And Vilna Gaon has something very similar. He says as well, we know we're supposed to be in Mitzrayim for 400 years in slavery, originally. And if you do the math, there's only 210 years that we were actually in Mitzrayim for, which means we left 190 years prematurely, we'll call it. By Emirus Chayim, why do we leave so many years early? Because in reality, we served 400 years worth of slavery in 210 years. So we have 190 extra years of Torah because we left Mitzrayim early. That's how he starts off. But then he gets even deeper. He says more than that. You know what Kadma V'Azla means? Kadma V'Azla in Aramaic. Got up and went. So because they made our lives so bitter, we got up and left. Kadma V'Azla early. And more than that, the gematria, says the Vilna Gaon, of Kadma V'Azla, or it looks like gematrias. The gematria of Kadma V'Azla, you can do it on your own right now. I'll do it with you. Kadma V'Azla, do the math. 145. The Azla. 45. We got up, we left 190 years early. You know why? By Maru Eschayehem, they made our lives so bitter. And therefore, it's a simcha. The last year is a simcha. We got up in the service of 210 years early. And that same exact concept. What they thought was going to be our end, making our lives bitter, was actually the source of our salvation of 190 years early. So the same way we have matzah, that was a simon of slavery, because it was no time for it to rise, because we had no free time ourselves. They kicked us out so fast and so quickly to become free people, we too had no time for it to rise. It's an important idea. Whenever you see something that happens that's challenging in life, there's really something behind the corner, hopefully, we should be able to see it, that will let us see that it wasn't not really a struggle for us, but actually it was a thing to propel us to greater heights. Tag.
Thanks for the dig.
Much, I like much.
Yeah. People like you. Is there a Haggadah anywhere? Next time? Haggadah. Here. Bounce around a little bit. Halach Manu, right, the very, very beginning of Magid. So the question is asked, how we go from Halach Manu, which as we all know is called the bread of affliction or poor man's bread. And at the end of the Haggadah, we're singing L'shana Haba B'Yerushalayim. Right, so like, you know, question number one, how do we get from there to there? You know, so quickly. I mean, some siddurim are not so quick. But take it even further. How'd you get to the end of Halach Ma'anyo? You say, Hashat Ha'ocho, L'shana Haba, Barad Yisrael, Hashat Ha'avde, L'shana Haba, B'nei Charen. How do we get from Halach Ma'anyo to Hashat Ha'ocho, L'shana Haba, Barad Yisrael, and Hashat Ha'avde, L'shana Haba, B'nei Charen, that we're free, we're going to be in Eretz Yisrael? How do we do that? What's the ingredient?
that we could add to our lives in order to actually fulfill what Halach Ma'anya is telling us and teaching us. So you all know that there's a Mishnah in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos when it talks about the Memches Kinyanei Torah, 48 ways to acquire Torah. And one of them is Pas B'melech Toichal, right? You should eat bread with salt. You should drink water in measurements. You should sleep on the floor. Now, that doesn't literally mean that you need to skip the delicious catering that Yeshiva Torah Traga offers you, and you have to ask somebody to bring up your bread and salt and water and, you know, get some straw to sleep on the floor. That's not what it's saying. So my Rebbe used to say, Rebbe Ratman Zatzal used to say, that it just means that, you know, if supper isn't good one night, then it means that you're going to have, you know, instead of going out, and knowing you're going to miss a little bit of night seder here, and it's one night seder, which turns into three, which turns into five. So if it means that you have to just eat bread with some salt and have some water, and if it means that there's a flood in your room and you're going to have to sleep on the floor somewhere or whatever, if that's what it means, so that you don't have to miss a seder of learning, so then that's what you have to do, if you have to do it. But it also shows a sign of simplicity that I could do without. I could do without the additives. I could do without the extra ingredients. We know matzah. Matzah can't have anything in it except for flour and water. And if you add anything to it, then you can't be mekayim the mitzvah of achilas matzah with that matzah on Seder night. It has to be as simple gets. Pas b'melech toichal. It has to be simple. The most simplistic meal that you could have is bread, water, salt. The most simplistic sleep you could have, which I don't consider it so simplistic, but it's sleeping on the floor, sleeping on some straw on the floor. That's what you got to do. Keeping it simple, and the Mishnah Avos says that's a way to acquire Torah. That's a way to become great. You do something so simple, that's a way to become great. So again, how does that happen? So, you know, we live in 2019, many, 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 many years, Tavshinayin Tes, many years since the creation of the world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a perfect universe. He created a perfect world, as simplistic gets. And we came along and messed it up. Right? We came along and decided that the world would be better with A, or the world would be better with B, or the world would be better with C. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sitting up there laughing at us and saying, like, you guys are a bunch of fools. You're just making life so much worse and so much harder for yourself. All right, I don't have to give you all the classic examples, the modern day examples of, you know, technology and smartphones and all these type of things, which are supposed to make our lives so much easier. And in certain areas it does. But overall, there is scientific proof that it has made our lives that much more complicated and that much more closed and that much more difficult to move on from ourselves in life. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu did really create a very, very perfect world. And it was as simple as it can get. We do have a way to tap into that. Baruch Hashem, us Jews are able to do this. Every 7 days we're able to simplify our lives and go back to that, you know, simplicity of Shabbos, and tap into the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, where we cannot invent, where we cannot mess up the world. That's really what we're doing. By not doing malacha, we're adding to, we're just going back to the simplicity and just saying, you know what? I just want it to be the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it. I don't want to be a part of the creation over here. Let's go back to the way it was, and let's not mess up anything up. You know, it's like somebody who gives a guy lends his $150,000 Lamborghini to his friend, and he says, "I want you to take it for a drive." Like, you'll take it for a drive, but you are going to be so careful to not mess that thing up. You're going to drive at 10 miles an hour. Right, you just don't want to mess things up. That's really Shabbos. We don't want to mess things up. We don't want to add to this perfect world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created. And that's the idea over here. Halach Ma'anya is if we simplify, if we use this simplicity, the matzah. If we tap into the simplicity and realize the lesson in the matzah, that is that it's just flour and water. It's as simple as it gets. These are the only two ingredients that could actually form something that could be edible, you know, in its simplest, most simple state. then we have the ability to become free people. We have the ability to become great and to do amazing things, as we see at the end of Halach Ma'anya. We read a little bit later on, V'hisha Amda. It's one of my favorite varts that I heard a few years ago. I was in Caesarea for the second days of Pesach, and the Rav Alon, he said over this idea in B'Shem, his father. And I just was blown away when he said it. And did I pass it around? No, okay. And every single year I say it, and I really try to internalize it for myself, the lesson that I get out of this. The Pashup Shad is every generation someone tries to wipe us out, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us. So he said over like this, he says, don't read it Shalo Echad Bilvad Amar Aleinu L'Chalasenu, not just one person try to wipe us out. Elisha B'chol Dovidar, every generation someone tries to wipe us out. He said, if we're going to go ahead and say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is number one, and he's the only one, there's no number two. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one through infinity, and there's nobody else in the world, then we'll be okay. Eventually, we may be facing persecution. We may face adversity. We may face hardship. But at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come through for us because we believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Echad. But he said, if you're going to believe Shelo Echad Bilvad, that there isn't only one, then Amar Aleinu L'Chalasenu. Then they are going to rise up against us and they are going to wipe us out. The second we take HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of the picture, if you ask yourself, what is Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah modern day Avodah Zarah is not just, is not bowing down to idols or wood or trees or people, whatever it is. Modern day Avodah Zarah is thinking that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, the creations, the extensions that he's made in this world, are God itself. It's my hand, it's my strength, it's my power. So we are Ovid Avodah Zarah on ourselves. So Shelo Echad Bilvad, when we start thinking that we can overpower, when we start thinking that we are in control over here, Amar Aleinu L'Chalasenu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show us that you are not in control. You are not in control. And again, it's the same concept. The second we put ourselves as an ingredient into the mix, then there are three things. It's not just flour and water anymore. There's a third ingredient over here. And that you can't have. That doesn't go on our Pesach Seder, at our Seder table. That doesn't work. But if you take yourself out, if you take yourself out of the ingredient list, and you just leave it as a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he's running the show, then we have the ability to have a Kadosh Baruch Hu matzilin miyadam. A Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to save everything that we do. Just to end with one thing that I read a few years ago, there's a man that lives in Santa Monica, California. His name is Peter Himmelman. And Peter Himmelman he married the daughter of Bob Dylan. My father helped Peter Himmelman become religious. He's a really great guy, very spiritual guy, and he's religious. You know, Bob Dylan's daughter is a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. Pretty cool. But so he was quoted in the most amazing publication, and if you want to find out any information in the world, you just open up Mishpacha magazine. You won't just find out pictures, see pictures of Rabbi Rich. You'll also read articles like Peter Himmelman's. And he was quoted as saying an absolutely profound statement, which I've quoted in so many different situations and venues, whether it's Shavuot Brachos or whether it's a bar mitzvah or over here. And he says that, you know, he's a musician also. He's a musician. He plays the guitar. And as a guitarist, I really can relate to this. If anybody knows how to play guitar, if you just strum on all the strings, I was going to bring my guitar for real, but I don't need to. If you take the pick and you just strum on all strings, it will sound horrible. It will sound horrible. Playing a guitar and playing beautiful music, as Rami knows, is holding back chords. Is pushing down on strings so that you don't hear them, is holding back things, keeping things out of the mix. Every kid that picks up a guitar, what does he want to do? He just wants to play. So what does he do? He strums. But it just sounds horrible because he thinks he's making music. But a real musician knows that the real way to make music is to hold back, is to take things out. And when you take those chords out, then you have a beautiful chord. You have an E minor, and you have a D minor, and all the chords that I don't know. Right, you have all these things. All right, but that's right. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Right, that's beautiful music. Beautiful music is holding things back. So the idea over here with matzah is when we're holding things back, and the idea with our lives is that the more we let a Kadosh Baruch Hu just let him run the show, and we take our abilities out a little bit, and just let a Kadosh Baruch Hu run our lives. So then you'll have real matzah, which Be'ezer Hashem gets everybody to the Arad Yisrael L'Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim. Tag.
Share one nice idea, and then let other people speak, and then if there's more time, happy to share more.
You need a guitar?
A nice idea about the charoses that I just saw this morning, that I never really had any nice divrei Torah about charoses. So the Ma'aril writes that you shouldn't think that anything that goes on at the Seder, any minhagim that we do, you shouldn't make light of any of the minhagim, because any minhagim that we have by the Seder, there must be a tremendous basis for it. In general, it's true about minhagim, but the Ma'aril writes specifically at the Seder night, he says, "Yaskil b'dayto l'kayim she'ein shum davar reik b'hen." There must be a purpose for it. And so he tries to understand what's going on behind charoses. What's the reason behind it? So the Rambam writes that when we dip the matzah in the charoses, and the Ravid says, "Zehevel." There's no reason to dip matzah in the charoses. And the Achronim explain that the kasha of the Ravid is based on the Sefer HaManhig, who asks, does it make sense for us to dip matzah in charoses? Because matzah is zecher lecheiros, zecher the freedom, and charoses is zecher the tit, which is about the slavery and the trouble that we found ourselves in. So how could you put these two together? How could you dip the cheiros into the slavery, into the tit? Added on to that, the Gemara says there's a mitzvah, charoses mitzvahi. So the Gemara says, Tzachim kufta zayin amad aleph, my mitzvah, Rabbi Levi omer zecher letapuach, Rabbi Yochanan omer zecher letit, Amar Abaye hilkach, tzarech lekuye v'tzarech lesmuche, lekuye zecher letapuach, v'tzarech lesmuche zecher letit. So we put the two. The purpose of charoses, you want to have both something zecher letapuach, and something zecher the tit as well. The Tosos quotes the Chuvas HaGaonim, who says that charoses beperos is because nidme leKnesses Yisrael, is to compare it to Knesses Yisrael. And then he adds, furthermore, ushkedim al shem shakshakar HaKadosh Baruch Hu al haketz. So we also added nuts into the charoses to commemorate HaKadosh Baruch Hu longing for the ketz to come. And the question is asked, what's going on over here? Why is it that now we're combining all these different things? So we're combining the tapuach, and we're combining zecher letit, and now all of a sudden we're adding in something about HaKadosh Baruch Hu longing for the ketz to come. Why is all of this combined into the charoses? So in the Yerach LaMoadim of Yeruchim Olshin, he quotes the Aderes. The Aderes is also quoted in the Sefer Mikrei Kodesh. But the Aderes explains as follows, which is quite fascinating. He says it's a lishitasam of the Rambam and the Ravid from Hilchos Tshuva. It's a famous question: why is it that the Mitzrim were punished for, for making the Jews slaves? If the Torah says va'adu v'inu osam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was already gozer that the Yidim were supposed to be slaves. So why is it that the Mitzrim were punished? So the Rambam and the Ravid give two different answers. The Rambam says the reason the Mitzrim were punished is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say that each specific Mitzri should have to do so. So he said that in the future, the Jews will be slaves, and the Mitzrim took it upon themselves to be the ones that were going to be the ones that enslaved them. The Ravid disagrees. The Ravid says it's because the Mitzrim went above and beyond in their subjugating of the Jewish people, that they could have just enslaved them a little bit, and instead of having them do avoda, they had them do avodas parech, which meant the koshi hashibud, how difficult the slavery was actually what they were punished for. So what the Aderes goes on to explain is that we see from the Ravid that Klal Yisrael was not nigzar. The punishment was not that they should have a tremendous amount of work. It was just a certain level of shibud. But the koshi hashibud, how difficult it was, that they were not decreed upon. And the Ravid says that that's what they were punished for, because the mitzvah went above and beyond them what they did. So the Adaris explains, this is what's going on over here. The Rambam says that the koshi hashibud, the difficulty of the slavery, was actually part of the gzera. Why? Because that was actually the tovasam shel Yisrael. That was actually for the benefit of the Jewish people, because they got out earlier because of it. Because they were supposed to be there for 400 years, and the time that they were slaves was actually much less because the slavery was so difficult. So, but that was part of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was gozer on them, so that it would speed it up. But that's what the Rambam holds, and that's why the Rambam says that that's not what the mitzvah were punished for. But according to the Ravid, must be the Jews went free earlier for some other reason, but not because of the koshi hashibud. According to the Ravid, the koshi hashibud was not actually that which was decreed upon them, and that's what the mitzvah were punished for, because they went above and beyond. So the Ravid says, so the Adara says, according to the Rambam, we understand why you would dip the matzah in charoses. Because according to the Rambam, the shibud, the difficulty of the slavery, was actually part of the redemption, because that's what allowed them to go free even earlier. So it makes sense that we would take the matzah, which is the cheirus, and dip it into the charoses, which is commemorating the tip, commemorating that aspect, the koshi hashibud, how difficult the slavery was, because actually the difficulty of the slavery was part of the freedom, as opposed to the Ravid, who would say that the koshi hashibud, how difficult it was something that the mitzvah decided to do on their own, so then you really shouldn't dip the matzah into the charoses, because they really, one doesn't have anything to do with the other. One is freedom, and the other is slavery, and the two aren't related. So what Rav Yerucham Olshan goes on to explain with this is, he says, this is also why we put nuts in, because Hashem was desiring, longing for the Sheba to end, for the Kates to come. He made the Kates even earlier, and this is symbolized by the Charoses, because the whole point is that the Koshi HaSheba, the difficulty of the Sheba, is why we got out even earlier. So the nuts symbolizes HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanting us to get out earlier, him longing for the Kates to come, and that's why we add that into the Charoses. And he also quotes over here the Tzlach, who says that this is why the order is actually Pesach, Matzah, Marah. It doesn't make sense. Marah should be first, because we start with the slavery, with the bitterness, and then we end and we get to Matzah. But the Tzlach says no, because the Marah is actually the Gula Amitis, Sha'ayde Shemaru Chayayim Nishlam Hazman. Because the Mara was what made the Geula come even quicker, so that's what completes the Geula by making it even sooner. And the whole point that Rav Yerucham Olshan is trying to bring out with this whole piece is to understand Koman Avid Rachmana Latav Avid, that sometimes we have the slavery, we see that we have a Koshi Hashibud. When Klal Yisrael were sitting there, they were calling out, it's so bad. Even Moshe Rabbeinu said, Lama Harayosem L'Amazeh, Kadosh Baruch Hu, why are you doing this? Why are you making it so difficult for the Jewish people that you put them as in such a difficult form of slavery? But the whole point is that even within the Koshi Hashibud, the fact that the slavery was so difficult was actually part of the salvation, was part of the fact that we got out even earlier, because Kol Man D'Avad Rachmana L'Tav Avid, and it's very easy to say, and very difficult to recognize, but that's what the message of dipping the matzah in the charoses is, to recognize that the cheiros and the shibud are all part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. And, you know, at the Levaya that we were at today, I'm not sure how exactly the wife of the Nifter is able to say such a thing, to just turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, you know, please, please, please don't leave me. Please allow me to continue to believe. But you can only have that approach, that amazing approach, if you really believe this of Kol Man D'Avad Rachmana L'Tav Avid, that no matter what happens, it's clearly all from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Over a chiddush, but it's a famous chiddush, not in mine. It's actually the Vilna Gaon, and the Rav is medayek it from the Rambam. Maybe we'll add one more prat. So we know that in the Agoda we talk about the Arba Bonim, that the four sons, they raise different questions. And the Haggadah, seemingly at least in my morning shiur, I said, addresses all four sons, because Salvechik points out in one of the Haggadahs, I think it's the Exalted Evening, that one of the messages is that the Torah relates to everybody. There's a message in the Torah for everyone. But here in the Harei Kedem, the Rav is Medayik, the Rambam, in Perek Zayin Hilchus Chometz Umatz Alocha Beis, the Rambam begins as follows. He says, Mitzvah lohidia labonim afilu lo yishalu. It's a mitzvah to inform your children about Yetzias Mitzrayim, even if they don't ask. L'fidaitoi shel ben aviv melamdoi. According to the son's intelligence, his father should teach him. He says, the Rambam says, if he's child or very young or foolish, you tell him, we were slaves like that Eved, and Hashem took us out. And if he was wise, then you inform him. So the Rav is Medayik, that if you look carefully in the language of the Rambam seems to be talking only about three out of the four sons. Because he starts off, he says, Mitzvah lo yedia labanim afilu lo yishalu. You have to inform your children even if they didn't ask. That's referring to the Sheina Yedei Lishol. He doesn't know how to ask. So even if he doesn't ask, you still have to tell him about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Lefi daitoi shel ben aviv melamdoi, according to his understanding, imhaya katan oitipesh, that refers to the Tam. And he says, because the Rambam has the gears of the Yushalmi, but the Yushalmi instead of Tam says tipesh. Imhaya haben gadol v'chacham oidioi, that's referring to the Chacham. So the Rambam seems to omit the Rasha in here in Mishneh Torah, when the Rambam describes the mitzvah of Sipritz Yis Mitzrayim, that you have to teach your children, he leaves the Rasha out. So what's the Pshat? What's Pshat? The Rambam leaves out the Rasha. So the Rav explains, based on the Gra, in the commentary to the Haggadah, the Gra says that the question that we have of the Rasha, which is found actually in Parashas Boy, that the Haggadah brings down as the question of the Rasha, Pasuk is, so the Rasha says, Ma avoida azois lachem. Why are you doing all of this hard work, preparing for Pesach, and what's this all about? The answer that the Torah says in Parashas Bo is not the answer quoted in the Haggadah. The answer the Torah says in Parashas Bo, it's found in the Pasuk, it says, V'hoyu ki'yomer aleichem b'neichem ma avoida azois lachem. And then the Pasuk says, the following Pasuk, V'amartem, Zevach Pesach Ula Hashem, Asher Pesach Al Bot B'nei Yisrael, B'nogfoy Es Mitzrayim, V'espoteinu Hitzel. You should describe that this is a Pesach sacrifice to commemorate the fact that Hashem passed over the houses of the Jewish people when he killed all the Egyptians and he saved us. But the Haggadah doesn't quote that Pasuk as the answer which we give the Rasha. The Haggadah says that you tell the Rasha, Bavur ze osa Hashem li b'tzeisim Mitzrayim, li v'loi loi, ilu ha-yasham la-ha nigol. L'chayra, that Pasuk of Yigadat al-Abincha, b'ayoyim ha-ulem, Bavur ze osa Hashem li b'tzeisim Mitzrayim, that's not in the Torah, the Pasuk that you say to the Rasha. That's the Pasuk that is describing what you say to the Sheini Yodei Elishol. He doesn't know how to ask. So he doesn't know how to ask. He got it to Labincha. You tell him, Hashem took us out on account of this. So the Gra asks two questions. First question is, what's Pshat? That in the Haggadah, the text is altered from that of the Torah. The Torah in Parashas Bo says, the Rasha asks, Ma avodah zois lochem. And the Torah says, you answer, V'amartem zevach Pesach ula Hashem. You should talk about, we make a carbon Pesach to commemorate the fact that Hashem passed over the houses of Bnei Yisrael, and he killed the Egyptians. But that's not what the Haggadah says. We tell the Rasha. We tell the Rasha the Pasuk of the Sheini Yedei Elishol, which is found in the Chumash. Of Yigadat al-Abincha, Lema b'Avruzeh Osa Hashem libetzeis Mitzrayim. That's one question. The other question the Gra asks is why in the language of the Haggadah does the Haggadah say that you don't really address the Rasha directly? It says, Vanisava Marta Bavur Ze Osa Hashem Li Betzeisim Mitzrayim. Hashem did this. Vemar Loi. You should say to him, Bavur Ze Osa Hashem Li Betzeisim Mitzrayim. Leave a loy loy. What do you mean, leave a loy loy? You should say, leave a loy lecha. Hashem took me out and not you. Ilu Hayasham, had he been there, loy anigal. It's like we're talking about him in the third person. Leave a loy loy. Hashem took us out, not him. If he would have been there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. Why don't we address him directly? Leave a loy lecha. So the Gra says that the answer is a chiddush, that we're not answering the Rasha. The Rasha doesn't get an answer. Because if you're not asking a question, which is a sincere question, the difference between the Rasha and the Chacham is the Pasuk says this again, and also pointed out in the, early in the morning, the question of the Chacham and the Chumash, it says, V'hoya ki yishalcha binchem machar leymar, ma idus v'achukim v'amishpatim ashetziv Hashem l'keinu eschem. So the Pasuk says, V'hoya ki yishalcha bincha, when your child will ask you a question. By the Rasha, it says in the Pasuk in Pashas Bo, V'hoyu kiyayru aleichem b'neichem, when your children will tell you, Ma avoid azois lachem. It's not a question. The Rasha is making a cynical statement, a cynical remark. So a cynical remark, you don't have to answer the Rasha. You can only answer a person who's actually sincere, who's looking to learn. A person is not sincere, he's cynical, he's critical and cynical, he's making snide remarks. He's saying it as a statement, right? The Torah says, when your children will tell this to you as a statement, so then we don't answer him directly, he doesn't deserve an answer. So what is the pshat in the pasuk when it says, the Torah says, you should say to yourself, when a Rasha makes a comment, so the Rasha's comment could chip away at our belief. So we have to strengthen our own emunah. We'd say to ourselves, the reason we're celebrating Karban Pesach is to commemorate the fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. He saved us and he made a geula. But we're not answering to the Rasha because the Rasha's not asking a real question. He's making a cynical remark. So that's what the Gra explains, is also the pshat, why the language of the Haggadah is in the third person. We say, leave a loy loy. Hashem did this to me, not to you. Ilu hayasham, if he would have been there, loy hayanigol, he wouldn't have been redeemed. Because we're not answering him. He's not asking a sincere question, a genuine question, so he doesn't deserve an answer. That's the pshat that Rav Soloveitchik says, b'shem the Gra, it's printed in the Gra's Haggadah, and he says that that's also the pshat on the Rambam, why the Rambam omits the Rasha when he describes who he should tell the story to. However, he does point out that Rashi disagrees, because Rashi in Chumash, on the pasuk, Bavur Zeh Osa Hashem Li, Rashi says, Ramas Tshuva Leben HaRasha, that the Torah here is hinting an answer to the Rasha. Lo yimar osa Hashem li v'lo yilcha. Shilu oisa sham. Had you been there, lo yisa kedai ligol, you wouldn't have been deserving of being redeemed. So according to Rashi, we do address the Rasha, and we're answering him in a manner of hinting to him that had you been there, you wouldn't have deserved been redeemed, because the whole purpose of Yitzias Mitzrayim is in order to be mekayim the mitzvahs. There's a famous Beis Halevi on that pasuk, Bavur ze osa Hashem li b'tzeis Mitzrayim. Rashi says in Chumash, Bavur shekayim mitzvoisav, Pesach matzah maror, I believe. So the Beis Halevi points out that b'chayra, you would have thought that why do we have Karban Pesach? Why do we eat matzah? Why do we eat maror? It's to commemorate the fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So remember that. That's why we have these mitzvahs. The Beis Halevi says, you see in the Rashi, it's the exact opposite. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in order that we should have these mitzvahs. It's not we have these mitzvahs to remember the fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in order to perform these mitzvahs. Bavur zeh. Bavur shekayim mitzvahs of Rashi, says in Chumash, in order that we should fulfill the mitzvahs. So that's what we say to the Rasha. The whole purpose of Yitzias Mitzrayim is to be mekabel the Torah, that we should perform the mitzvahs. And therefore, Rashi says that's the answer to the Rasha, that if you would have been there, you don't want to do the mitzvahs, it's too much of a burden, then you wouldn't have been redeemed, because the whole point of Yetzias Mitzrayim is in order to perform the mitzvahs. One final point, though, on this Russia idea that we did mention earlier this morning, that the Hasidim say, I saw this in the name of the, I think it's the third Bezel Rebbe, Rabbi Sacher Dover Keach, that he said, he's Medayek, the Lashon of the Haggadah. It says, Ilu Hoya Sham, Lo Yoya Nigel. If he would have been there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. Meaning, in Mitzrayim, before the Jews went out, so he didn't have the schus. If he had this attitude, he wouldn't have been redeemed, because he has this terrible negative attitude. He doesn't want to keep the mitzvahs, and he's cynical, so he wouldn't have been redeemed. But after, says the Bel Zareb, is only before Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, that even if you're a Rasha, even if you're a big cynic, and you're a Rasha, you still have a chance at having a Geula. Because if you have the Torah, and through the Torah you could do tshuva, and you could be zaycha to a Geula. So it's only, we're saying, had he been there in Mitzrayim, the Matan Torah, then he wouldn't have been nigel. But otherwise, he would have been redeemed. Just one last nekuda is that this is pointed out also later in the Hari Kedem, in the name of the Rav, that the Chacham, he asks, says, Ma idos v'achukim ha-mishpatim asher tziva Hashem l'keinu eschem. That's the pasuk in Vayeschanan. And the pasuk says, V'amarta l'bincha avodam il panam Mitzrayim, Vayetzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim b'yod chazaka, Vayetzaveinu Hashem l'aso, he says, Kol ha-chukim ha-ilu l'yiras Hashem l'keinu So in the Torah it says that the Chacham, you give him an answer, you tell him, he's asking, what is pshat in all these laws? So you tell him, because we were slaves in Egypt, and Hashem took us out with great miracles, and Hashem commanded us to keep all these laws, that we should fear Hashem for our benefit. L'toiv lanu kol hayomim. It should be something that's beneficial for us forever. For eternity. So he says that the Chacham sounds like, from the answer to the Chumash, that even though in the Pasuk it only mentions one part, he's really asking two questions. He's asking, what's the idea? Why do we have all these laws? And secondly, what's the benefit of all these laws? And the answer that we tell him in the Chumash is that it's so we should be Zaycha to get Olam Haba. So how come in the Haggadah we don't say that? In the Haggadah it says, Afatoim Aloyke Hilchis HaPesach. And what happened to the second answer? The Torah says that we have these mitzvahs in order that we should have. So the Rav answers that the pshat is that we see from here a big yisoid. He says the yisoid is that when you learn Torah b'iyon, you delve into Torah b'iyon, then you don't have any more kashas. Then there's no more questions. What's the ta'eles of the Torah and the mitzvahs? You learn the Torah be'iyun. You have to teach the Chacham kehilchos ha-pesach ad ein maftir nachar pesach afikoymon. You have to teach him the time of mitzvahs, the svaris, the reasoning for the mitzvahs. Once you're learning Torah be'iyun, he says that takes away all the questions. And Memela, he understands on his own that when you learn Torah and you keep the mitzvahs, you're zaycha to Olam Haba.
Okay, so something very short, but right before I show you with the short idea, just a little bit of a mahalach, and you're preparing for the Seder, that it's important to look at the Haggadah in two ways. One is that it's a sefer that you learn for yourself to understand, and there's, as you see from all the shiurim we had in the morning and the afternoon, and now there's so many layers and so much to learn in every single section, line, and word of the Haggadah. And that's something that's a great time to learn it is the next couple of weeks, is that you're outside of yeshiva, you need something else to learn. It's a fun thing to learn, and it's a safer, early on, that's worth learning as a separate safer. But your learning is not in preparation for the Seder night. When you're learning the Haggadah necessarily. It could be once in a while you see something that you realize, I should say this over. When you're learning the Haggadah, you're not just looking for nice varts to say at the Seder night. You might bump into them along the way, but that's one limud. You're learning the Haggadah as an end in and of itself. And most of the things you're going to learn, you shouldn't be saying over at your Seder. It's not what your family is interested in and as excited as you get to finally understand a pshat you never understood before, they probably won't, they may not share that same excitement. So there's a whole separate preparation for the Seder night. And on the Seder night, the Iker to focus on, a lot of the Rabbanim point out, is Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what the Mitzvah Daraisa is, and less in terms of the Diyukim and the words of the Haggadah and different Varts in the beginning of the Haggadah is to focus mostly on the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim part, which is the suffering in Mitzrayim and the Makos that took place in Mitzrayim and in the leaving of Mitzrayim and in the Mitzvahs that Klal Yisrael did right as they were leaving Mitzrayim. And a lot of our understanding and our knowledge of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is really in a very basic kindergarten, first grade, second grade level. And it's very worthwhile when preparing for the Seder night is to learn Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim on a deeper, more adult and mature level. What exactly happened over there? What were all the different ways that they suffered when they were there? What was the reasons and what was the process that ended up having the Geulas begin to come? Why Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen and how that process all started? And why specifically the Eser Makos? That's something very worthwhile learning, and that you're learning in terms of figuring out how do I say this over at the Seder. And it's a very good idea also. A lot of times the families are often worried, oh no, how much time is he going to stretch out our Seder for? What is he going to hit us with? And therefore, it's very nice if in the beginning, you just sit there, you read the Haggadah with everyone else, you let Kadesh Orchatz go by, Halach Ma'anya go by, you know, Manashtana go by, and all of a sudden, they start to get calmer. Oh, he's not going to throw anything upon us. He's not going to shut us down. We're making progress, we're making headway, we're turning pages. Meanwhile, you make sure you understand all the words that you're saying and you learned it well before. And then when you get to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, you have exciting stories to tell and midrashim to tell, and you bring alive the story of Mitzrayim in a way that you boggle them, you shock them with like things they never knew about the suffering, things they never knew about the Makos, why the Makos, and then you get the whole table alive and popping. And it's great sometimes to get them into it. Not that you're necessarily preaching to them. Ask questions. Think of how am I going to deliver this? That's even more important than what exactly you're going to say is how are you going to say in a way that you bring the people in the table in. And to remember that you're not the father of the table, and there's your father's Seder, your grandfather's Seder, your uncle's Seder, whoever, unless they ask you to run it, you're not the one that's running it, and it's not your show right now. And you might be very excited about the things that you're excited about, but don't torture everybody else with your excitement. And you could save a lot of it for during the soup. Yeah, when you're eating the chicken, it doesn't have to be earlier. And start making for yourself. Now is a great time to start making for yourself a booklet of all the things you want to tell over to your children when it is your Seder. When you are running it, you could save a lot of those things for them because your parents and your aunts and uncles aren't necessarily your children to teach them that kind of a way. The Eser Makos, the way that we look at it, it's really a very funny bunch of 10 plagues that when you look at it, it's like, wow, like we're so used to it, but this is such a funny way to punish them. What is going on over here? Like, whoever would have thought that this is how Kodesh Baruch Hu was going to punish them? Like, every one of them was like, what is this? Is crazy. This is so ridiculous what's happening over here. But when you look at the Midrashim and you see that every single Makkah was parallel to different ways that the Mitzrayim tortured the Jews in Mitzrayim. They were tortured for many, many years. And like, your friends are now going to Poland and they're going to hear a lot about the Holocaust. There were so many different types of levels of suffering in the ghetto and in the concentration camp and in the death camp and leading up to and so to a Mitzrayim, which lasted for even longer. There were many different levels and aspects of their suffering. When the Makos came, both the Egyptians and the Jews knew how each Makkah was linked to the type of suffering the Jews had and why this was happening to them. Together with the Makkah was this unbelievable Giloy Shechina, where you saw, oh my goodness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what was happening to us all along, and he's taking retribution against the Mitzrayim, and that Mitzray that, you know, punched me 10 times in my arm, he's now being, you know, banged up by the barad or by the wild animals or with the boils or whatever it is, exactly in the spot that he hit me in. And I see that. And that thing that I thought went unnoticed was very noticed and very dealt with. So to when you learn the Makos, learn the Chazals and learn how they were linked to the different things the Mitzrim did and bring that alive at your Seder, where you're basically, it's a lesson in Hashkacha Pratis to us. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to be. Why did he do it in this way? He could have had the Egyptians, you know, the Dam would have been enough. Don't stop the Dam until they let them leave Mitzrayim. You didn't need the Dam. You can have all their teeth, that terrible toothache. If you ever have a horrible toothache, imagine all their teeth would kill and they're writhing in pain until finally they let them leave. But no, he did it specifically in a way that he was teaching the world and Klai Yisrael especially how I knew your suffering, I'm dealing with it. Those that deserve punishment get punished. Those that are rewarded get rewarded. Nothing went unnoticed. And there's a special letter that's brought in the beginning of a bunch of Haggadahs. And there's a school to learn it in Erev Pesach, this letter. It's written by a big Makubal. And if you want, I could show you inside where to find it. It's a school to learn in Erev Pesach. But one of the things that it talks about in that letter is how the Malachi Chabala, the avenging Malachim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent to do the Makos, were the same Malachim that take retribution from people in Gehenna. It was when a person goes to Gehenna and we're cleansed from all the sins that we did in our lifetime in order to be able to have the schar of Gan Eden. So those same malachim that do that to us when we go to Gehenim and to the Rishon, when they go to Gehenim, those are malachim that were taking retribution against the Mitzrim. In other words, what happened, it was very natural that those things would happen to the Mitzrim. A punishment of Mida Kenegan Mida is the way that Gehenim works. The Chiddush is that we got to see it, and that was in this world. In other words, Gehenim came alive, where we got to see what happens in the next world, take place in front of us in this world, and happen to the Egyptians. But it happens anyway. The Chiddush was that we got to see it. So to focus on these kinds of ideas and learn this, bringing it alive in a way that everybody at the table and ourselves, especially our emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and in his Hashkacha Pratis and in Tzchar and Onesh and in Geula in general, like Rabbi Yerfa was speaking about, how this, the final Geula that we're waiting and is going to come soon, so that how it's going to happen, that we should leave the Seder not just with a lot of nice shots on the Haggadah, which is something good for learning beforehand, but to leave the Seder with a connection and excitement from Sipur Tzivos Mitzrayim, that it strengthens our emunah. Now I'll just tell you one little beautiful idea, this is an idea from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He starts it off, he says, there seems to be a stira, a contradiction in the davening in Shacharis that we say every day and the davening that we have in Maariv. Because every day in Shacharis, we say, Yimitzrayim ge'otanu Hashem lakenu v'beis avandu p'disanu, kol b'choreim harakta. It sounds like the order of events when they left Mitzrayim was Mitzrayim ge'otanu. First they left Mitzrayim, the base of other Pidisanu, and then called Bechoreim Harakta. You killed all the Bechorim. But in Maariv every night, we seem to say the opposite order. In Maariv every night, we say, Hamake be'evroso called Bechoreim Mitzrayim, v'yotze es am Yisrael mitocham l'cheres olam. Hamake be'evroso called Bechoreim Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu smote the Bechorim and Mitzrayim with his wrath, and then Vayotzei Am Yisrael Mitochem L'Cheres Olam, he took B'nai Yisrael out. So what was actually the order? In Shacharis we talk about how first they left, and then the Bechorim died, and in Maariv we talk about how first the Kodesh Baruch Hu smote them, and then B'nai Yisrael left. So what actually was the order? That's what Shlomo Zalman Orbach asks. And he answers with the Hakdama. If you learn in the back of Masechas of Odozor, Horios, and Ezios, then you have the Masechtos Katanos, small little Masechtos. And one of them is Masechas Smachos. In the very beginning of Masechas Smachos, it starts off with a stira that Rabbi Yochanan, I think, asks. It says, in one pasuk in Shmos, Perak Yud Beis, it says, Ve'hi b'chatsia layla, v'Hashem hika kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim. At chatzos layla, a Kodesh Baruch Hu was hika kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim. It happened at night. Kodesh Baruch Hu smote the b'chorim. But another pasuk says, "Bemidbar Parachas, Kili kol b'chor, bayom hakosi kol b'chor. Bayom hakosi kol b'chor. During the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu smote kol b'chor. So did it happen at night? Or did it happen during the day? Ask Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan answers. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. And here's the answer, both to the steer in Shacharis and Mariv, and to the steer in the Psukim. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Afa pisha hika osam, makas maves michotze alayla, the way that Makos Bechoros happened was that he smote them, a deathly smote at night, but they didn't die yet. They were in their deathbeds, writhing in pain and slowly dying. It was obvious they were going to die, but they only died the next morning when Bnei Yisrael left already. And that way, it continues over there in Masechet Smachos, there was a double benefit. Both the Jews got to see before they left that the Bechorim were going to die. So they got to see the Makkah. And the Bechorim themselves got to see Bnei Yisrael leave, which was an extra punishment for them. They see, look, Klal Yisrael got to get out. So it was a double benefit that the Sonim saw, the enemy saw the Jews were going to get out. But also, and they knew they were going to die. And the Jews got to see that the Bechorim were going to die after they left already. And that's why it's very meduyuk in the Psuk, in Shacharis and Marav, we specifically say at night we say Hamakeh, Kadosh Baruch Hu smote them, but it doesn't say they died yet. And then Bnei Yisrael left. And in the morning, which is the order of how it happened, the next morning when Klal Yisrael left already, so first they left and then the Bechorim died. That's why it says, V'beis avadim p'tisanu, kol Bechorim harakta. So in the morning, when Klal Yisrael left already, then it says, Kol Bechorim Harakta, after they left already. That's when he actually killed them, when they actually died.
Okay, so just wanted to share something which I saw. Really nice vort in the heart of Magid. Something which is not as commonly spoken about. But in one of those paragraphs, which many seders just they sort of go over very quickly and someone reads through them. So it says, Vanitzak el Hashem Elokei Avoseinu, Vayishma Hashem es Kolenu, Vayaras Anyenu v'yas Amalenu v'yas Lachaseinu. That we screamed out to Hashem, the God of our forefathers, and Hashem heard our voices. So I saw question brought in the Haggadah Tal Le'oros from a Maisa, from the Sefer Maisa Barabi Eliezer, that why does it say Bnei Yisrael screamed out in the Zchus of their forefathers, in the Zchus of Elokei Avoseinu? However, we're answered, Vayishma Hashem es Kolenu. Hashem hears our own voices in our own behalf, in our own Zchus. So what's Pshat? Why is Hashem answering on our own Zchus if we called out in the Zchus of our forefathers? So, based off of Gemara and Brachos and Daf Yud, Gemara says that anyone kol hatola b'zuchos acherim tolim lo b'zuchos atzmo. That anyone who attributes, who asks for on behalf of something else, on someone else, so they're going to be answered on their own behalf. And it gives an example of Moshe Rabbeinu. And I think the idea is as follows, that when we scream out to Hashem, when we ask Hashem for something, for anything, so we can never come from a place of I deserve something. Of Hashem, give me this because I deserve it, because I'm a really good guy, I learn Torah all the time, I'm great midos, I'm always doing mitzvos, and Hashem, you should give me this thing because I really deserve it. We never ask Hashem for something in that way because it's not really true. We don't really know Hashem's point of view. We don't know Hashem's perspective. We don't know any reason why Hashem does anything. We don't know how valuable anything which we do is. Hashem could be that, it could be that for us, something is really easy. So it comes to us really easily. So Hashem, and for someone else, it comes really hard for them. So when they do something which seems much less chashiv to us, they really are much greater than we are, even though we can't really tell. Like something which really struck me when Lavi Greenspan came to speak to us, someone asked him, I forgot the exact question, but it was something like why, how could it be, like, are you angry at Hashem? Are you angry at Hashem for what he did, that he took away your eyesight, that you're blind? that you had your eyesight until 20-something years old, and then you became blind. So are you angry at Hashem for that? So he answered without any hesitation, without any thought, no, not at all. Like, look at what I have. Like, I'm walking, I'm living. I have so many things which are going right for me. I'm able to talk to people. I'm able to communicate with people. I'm able to share with people. People, you know, I have a personality. I have this and that. And he started pointing out just little basic things that we all take for granted that he has in his life. And I think that's the perspective which we're supposed to have. That really every single thing that Hashem gives us, Hashem's giving not because we deserve it. That Hashem, every single thing which He gives us, starting from the bottom up, starting from the basic necessities of life, is a gift. It's not something that we deserve. It's not something which we're giving, which Hashem gave to us because we, so to speak, deserve it. And I think perhaps this part of the Haggadah is supposed to remind us and to help us tap in to that idea. That really everything that Hashem gives for us throughout the year, throughout our entire lifetime, is really just because it's really a matana from Hashem. We're not asking from our own on our own behalfs, so we only ask Hashem on behalf of other people.
Thank you very much.